Hello, how you doing today? With everything going on in your life, I'm sure you're a little stressed, but
Relocating is so easy. Sending kids to college, so easy. I don't know what you're talking about.
so let's see, this summer you have kids going to college, internship, house sale, moving cross country. I mean, like really easy, non-stressful stuff.
Easy,
New
easy, easy. Recording a podcast, the hardest thing on
project.
my radar screen for today, quite literally. But we survived that too. One day at a time, one hour at a time right now. So today, what are we talking about?
Six phases leadership framework for transformation success.
That's
Rolls right
right.
off the tongue.
It totally does.
I think as people understand, our topics around this podcast are really around digital transformation. And the fact that digital transformations are not going to be successful unless everybody's on board, and that includes leadership. And so today we really wanted to talk about six things that we believe from a strategy, vision, and leadership perspective need to be in place for that transformation to be successful.
So think about this. So we've all been in this situation, right? We're sitting in the boardroom. We've got this huge monster PowerPoint. We've got a lot of people around the table. They are nodding heads north and south, up and down. And we hear the magic word digital transformation. Oh. And here's the thing is we did a little bit of research. We found that 70% of these multi-million dollar digital transformations that are so hard to even get through the acceptance phase fail. Period. Full stop. They fail. Or they just have minimal impact, which is really just a failure. So we're looking at, okay, why do those fail? And it's not the technology that we're working with. It's not the strategy necessarily. A lot of it comes down to the leadership. And that's really what we're going to address today. And it happens so many times that you get into these boardrooms, you see the C-suite, everybody's excited. You've gone through all of this work to put together a business case. You've got the financials, and things just fall apart. It doesn't get socialized. It fractures. And that's what we're going to really talk about today. Because when transformations succeed, it's absolute magic. And it's not just the people who, it's not just the leadership, it's not just the business that gets, it's about transforming the business, it's about transforming the leaders that are leading those. And I think that's a big thing is when you go through these transformation initiatives, you come out the other end a different person as you're the leader, as you are the person who's impacted. And suddenly you see, oh, my career might go into a different direction. The team who was involved, who are the primary stakeholders, it's a whole new sense of accountability, responsibility, enablement, and it really can bring people together. But we got to make sure that we're setting up the right way in order to get there. And that's really what we're looking at today is that scenario about how do we get those successes to those digital transformations to be successful. And what key stat that I just loved is that transformation success rates jump from 30 to 79% with active ELT involvement. And that's McKinsey stat, that's not wishful thinking. That's the one that we want. So that's really the focus on what we're going to talk about today is how do you take it from kickoff all the way through project end from a leadership perspective to make sure that your digital transformation is successful? Yeah.
And I think it's super important to talk about this because I think we've all worked in companies where there's been various levels of engagement from leadership. And so from a day-to-day perspective, it may not impact. But to your point, when we take on these multi-million transformational digital engagements and transformation projects, it really does fundamentally change the fabric of how this company is going to work. And that's the intent, right? And so I think that people often view the program itself as the transformation and not all the components outside of that program. And usually when people talk about program, which we'll talk about today, is they talk about the technology, right?
The
They
what?
talk
It's
about
all about the what.
Right. What they can see and touch, not what they can't see, which is really leadership, business process, change management, like all the other things that really make these things successful.
Yeah.
So yeah. I know we have six lessons to talk about today. Why don't we jump into lesson number one?
So the first one, may be the most uncomfortable truth of all, out of all of these six. So let's just be really simple about it. You think your vision is clear. It's not. And that can be a real gut punch. But the evidence is there. Deloitte found that 67% of digital strategies lack clear success metrics. And even worse than that, the 89% in 89% of failed transformations, unclear objectives were cited as the top reason. So again, it goes to your vision. What are you trying to do? Because you put it out there and your team knows it's not abundantly clear. And so here they are trying to make it all happen, right? So they're filling it in with assumptions, with misalignments, and things are going to stall out because of this. So, you know, when we think about, you know, what's the vision, for some reason, we tend to kind of go into this realm of visioning and saging instead of getting super, super clear on what are we trying to do. So if we think about, okay, our vision is to modernize the tech stack.
What does that mean?
What the heck is that? So here's where we really think about what's the business vision and the transformation vision, because those are going to be two very, very different things. So the business vision might be, you know, be the number one SaaS platform for financial services. I was looking on Dell's website because, you know, Amazon Prime Days and Dell's running all sorts of specials up against that right now. So Dell's vision, be the essential tech company for the data era, enabling customers to modernize and thrive in the digital world. That's great vision. But when we get to your transformation vision, we got to get really, really clear on what that looks like. So this is where we're looking at specifically for a transformation. It might be, we are looking to re-platform onboarding workflows to reduce implementation time from 90 to 30 days. We're going to get really, really specific. We're going to be measurable. We're going to be relatable. And this is where I love Simon Sinek. He really starts with the why. And I think with a lot of leaders, it starts with the what, like you were saying. We need AI. We need to implement a new CS tool. And the why is really what drives the connection more than the what. So instead of AI, maybe it's we need to think, you know, we need every customer to feel confident using our product or our tool. And AI is going to help us to scale that confidence.
I mean, I think a lot of people in defining the why, it's, I think, an uncomfortable definition because it's really taking a look cross-functionally too.
Yeah.
Right. And connecting, you know, the purpose of what you're trying to do here.
Right.
And I think for most people, having those conversations and aligning them, I think it becomes a timing issue. When people decide to do these digital transformations, I think, you know, in your opening, you were talking about, hey, you're in the boardroom and everyone's getting excited and you spent so much time putting a deck together. But I've seen this time and time again, and I'm sure you have and our listeners have, is where the deck has been put together by a group of people that a leader has brought into the room, who they believe are responsible potentially for this transformation. What very rarely happens, does that conversation expand to the other leaders in the company? And so when we talk about leadership and we talk about that vision, that really should start with whoever owns the digital transformation, anchoring it with every executive in the organization. Every executive should be aligned to, I agree. And in that agreement is, and this is how the why impacts me, or this is my version of the why. So you really understand how this comes together because, you know, as we talk about here, digital transformations, you said it, doesn't change the fabric of the company. But if it's only changing a third of the fabric of the company, then the rest of the company is still operating under the old principles.
Right. So absolutely. And why the why is the most important thing, because that's what people are going to really bond behind, because transformations are difficult. Transformations can be really, really messy until you get through to the other side. And so it really is going to be that that vision that is going to drive everybody together and make sure that that we're aligned. And that's going to go actually, as you're talking, I'm previewing lesson number two.
Right.
Which really goes to that exact point that if your leadership isn't aligned, it shows and it fractures.
Right.
And I think that's so critical that, you know, not only does the vision need to very, very specifically break out, okay, it has to be it can't be too technical. It can't be too vague. It's got to, the transformation has to have very, very clear, why are we doing this? What are we doing? And what are the outcomes going to be? Everybody needs to get behind that. When we talk about the leadership and your point about everybody needs to be aligned, that one's going to hit just as hard. So you can articulate the best vision, but if you've got three different versions of that vision, then it's going to be really challenging for the people who are affected or the ones who are actually going to be putting this into place and changing their workflows, changing their processes, because they're not going to know which of those visions is correct. So to your point, when leadership have three different versions, one is potentially it's a cost savings measure. And another one's going to be it's speeding things up. And another one's going to be talking about how do we innovate? And all the team hears is our leadership team is not talking on the same page. And we're going to burn out because, of course, we're all going to try to please each of those.
Well, and I think all those things could be true, right?
Absolutely.
Right. So, again, I think the vision connects, but I, you know, when we talk about execution, the execution could be, hey, as modernizing our tech stack, we're going to eliminate costs by reducing the number of applications, by looking at this digital transformation as a way how we change how we work, i.e. business process, it's going to reduce, it's going to improve productivity. I think what you're getting at in the why is, well, what's the real North Star? And right. I don't think anybody would say it's not to increase revenue, period, right?
Like, again, it comes to, okay, what is the business vision versus the transformation vision? The business vision is absolutely going to be, we are going to double revenues, or we're going to increase profitability over the next 3 years. Now the transformation comes into the, okay, what are the specific things that we are going to do? And it, yes, it does get into the, how are we going to get that done and the what, but we've got to make sure that that North Star is, this is the growth we're looking for, or here's where we need to be more efficient.
Right.
Point blank.
Again, this connected vision helps everybody, to your point, rally behind the right things to do.
Yeah.
Right? Because when the noise comes in, which it does, and distractions, I mean, sometimes these
transformations... We still have the day job, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And sometimes these transformations can take a year, maybe longer, 18 months. I mean, we've been
100%.
Through... programs. And on these really, really long programs, you have staff turnover, you have people go on vacation and projects slow down, and you have consultancies that come in and out, and you have just the weight of the transformation weighs on people. After a while, it's just exhaustion sets in, and you're like, I can't do it anymore. But if you really have that strong why, and leadership is truly engaged, which we'll get to, then you can kind of work through the monotony that does become the transformation, which.
Yeah. And that's really incumbent, I think, on the leadership to have that consistent story. You've got a slide that I absolutely love because I think it makes it very, very clear. There are multiple reasons to do a transformation, and typically they're going to have growth. And you've got a slide that has, here are our growth numbers. Here's where we're, you know, we've got top line and we've got bottom line, and they're going to work together in order to get to the transformation goal that we're, right. that we're coming to. And I think that the leadership, dude, you better write the song the right way, because you are going to sing that song over right. and over and over again. And hopefully the one that takes off, the version that takes off is the version that you love singing, because
right.
you're going to be that rock star for the next year and all of your tours. And everybody needs to hear that same song again and again and again.
Well, and it's funny you say that, because I, over the years, I've worked for companies and they get bored, I feel like, with saying the same thing. So they try to change it up, or they'll be influenced from some outside podcast or some statement they or some book they read. And they'll be like, oh, well, we should look at it this way. And you're like, hold up.
Right.
Does that still try to tie to the vision and the why? Like, I get it. You may be bored of singing your greatest hits, but that's what the team needs to hear. Because the second the board, ELT say, oh, look at the next new shiny object, you're like, we're in the middle of this shiny object.
Right.
Look, we're not, we can't deviate at this point. And often I've seen them say, well, why can't you go quicker? Or why can't you do this? Or why can't you do that? And look at this. And I just read this article, or I did this. And you're like, all great.
Right.
But remember, we started with a purpose and a vision, and we have to finish with that purpose and vision. And I'm not saying that throughout the transformation that adjustments don't happen. If you're doing your job, adjustments happen.
Absolutely.
But it's like 2 millimeter shift, not 180 degree shift, right?
100%. So, you know, Patrick Lencioni is like one of my favorites. I really like his writing. I like his lessons. I think he's just super, super smart. And one of the things that he talks about is vulnerability-based trust. And one of the things that I really like about that is when you are leading these transformations, that is a very lonely, very, right. very nerve-wracking responsibility, because you do have these enormous pressures on you to deliver. And the thing is that when we put together the financials, we put together the plan, we've got this amazing program we're running, we've got teams in place, and we don't know all the answers.
Right.
And so I think being, you know, one of the things that I see leaders who I really respect is when they say, it's okay that we don't know all the answers right now, but we're going to put a point in line where we got to know the answer by then and make right. a decision that keeps, again, all of our guiding principles in mind while we make that decision. And then we just go forward and adjust as it is. Right. And I think, you know, when we don't have in leadership teams, when we don't have that level of transparency and trust, I think it really affects the program because we don't make decisions in the right way.
Right. Right. And I think that leads to lesson two, right? Which yeah. you alluded to, which is, you know, your leadership team isn't actually aligned and it shows. And so yeah. to your point, when those really critical decisions need to be made, everybody has to be on the same page because they need to be made quickly.
100%.
And they need to be made efficiently. And a lot of times those things happen not because people are lazy or haven't thought through the process. They're just incidental impacts of a large scale project. Sure. Hey, we thought through everything. We missed this piece.
Yeah.
So how do we want to course correct this piece?
Totally. Totally. And I think, you know, when we think about, okay, what are the actions that you can take to make sure that you are, that your leadership is addressing transformation with one voice, you know,
right.
we need to make sure that everybody's aligned. We need to make sure that everything is consistent, because otherwise we don't want it to fall apart downstream. So I think when we look across functions and we start connecting, I know your favorite, you know, everything is connected, you know, is really important. But when we do involve frontline teams, when we do acknowledge that we are creating the solution on the fly, the bigger we dig into this, the more the solution really becomes clear and starts to crystallize. Being super transparent and getting that feedback really helps us to make sure that that we are building a vision that everybody can buy into. So on one hand, yes, everybody needs to have a single voice. This is what we're driving to. But then we also need to leave that room and make sure that when we're speaking with, you know, one voice about the transformation goals. And then as we are creating the solutions, as we are working across teams, that we are keeping those in mind as we start to put together and connect the dots.
Well, I agree. And I love the vulnerability aspect of that, because connecting the dots is really at times saying, I don't know everything, right?
Absolutely.
So there's a reason why you have a head of marketing and a head of sales, because they have skill sets that are complementary that bring us together. What I find frustrating in a lot of companies is this idea of, I'm here, I do this, and you do this, and you do this. And yeah, there is an intersection, but we don't really need to talk about that. And that really manifests itself in broken business processes, bad results, not connected
in these decisions.
Right. And these digital transformations on the surface are aimed to connect all that, right? If you're going to modernize your tech stack and you think about just the go-to-market part of your business, you go from, hey, a lead comes in through various sources, events, website, whatever, that lead is cleansed, it's kind of lead scored, and then it goes into sometimes a BDR, or sometimes it goes right to an AE and then they take it on. So there's this constant process all the way through when that customer becomes a client to renewal and to cross-sell and upsell. This is not a marketing did their job, now hands off. No, right. Marketing is learning from whether that sale closed or not.
Right.
Marketing is learning how we're going to upsell and cross that sell, what messages are working. Because the client may have bought product A and another client may have bought product B, but client who didn't buy product A, well, what was that messaging that got this guy to buy product A? Well, that's what we need to do in the renewals or in the upsell cross sell. Well, that normally is done in sales, not necessarily in marketing.
Right.
Or sometimes it's done in CS or even
support. I was about to say, absolutely. Yep.
You're having this challenge. So the more leadership is aligned on that vision, and to your point, speaking with that one voice and being vulnerable and saying, listen, I don't understand marketing. I don't understand how this lead is coming through or what this lead is doing.
Right.
Why are we doing that way?
Right.
Questioning that connection. And saying, could we do it differently?
Yeah.
That's transformation, is fundamentally doing it differently.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, you and I both have been on projects where there is a decree coming from one functional area. Right. We are going to do this, and it is potentially in direct conflict with the other functional area. However, they are cross-functional teams in terms of the customer experience. And I think that's the big thing, is where the why is so important. Why are we doing this? And if the more that it is connected to the experience that we are providing, the value that we are providing, that becomes our really guiding light in terms of how it gets done. And then, you know, there has to be some grace at the top for, we work together in order to make sure that we are producing the best product that we possibly can, that we are providing the quintessential customer experience, whatever that guiding light is. We've got to have that coordination and that allowance that the cross function is needed in order to make the goal work and in order to make the transformation work. And I will say, the exciting part of these transformations, in my experience, is when suddenly, like, you're midway through and you're starting to test some things, and now you see that hip bone connected to the leg bone, as you love to say, and you start to see, oh, that data is flowing, or, oh, if it's a marketing, like, the marketing is working, and now sales is starting to really bubble up. And it's really, really messy when that happens, but it's also so empowering. when you start to see that happen. And that's where, you know, having that shared vision, understanding what are the KPIs that we're going to gradually work into as we put this, make it really, really exciting and transformational. That's the transformation.
Leaders, like I've worked for a leader who I respect greatly, and he wouldn't really make a move unless he had the collective feedback from his directs. So he's like, sounds good to me, but what is Sarah think? What is Jane think? What is, you know, Joe think? And sometimes frustrating because I felt like it delayed the decision, but ultimately what he was driving to is if everyone's aligned, we're moving forward. If people aren't aligned, we have to understand why. Why aren't you aligned to this vision? What breaks this vision? And conversely, I've worked on projects where leaders have just basically said, yeah, here you go, not me, which leads into the next lesson. Which is really showing up matters more than you think. And you're probably not showing up the way you should.
You mean when I go to kickoff and I tell everybody what we're going to do and I get really fired up and I'm a great speech giver, that's not enough?
Yeah. No, it's not. And I think there is different ways that leadership shows up. And I think that one is there is this rally cheerleader aspect of leadership, right? Hey, we're going to do this. This is so exciting. This is what it means, the direction of the company. I mean, that's what CEOs do. That's what C-level executives should be doing, is always championing the most positive aspects of your company and really giving people that vision, that why, that we can do this mentality, rallying the troops, right? As you'd call it.
Right.
And I think a lot of that helps and starts to build trust, build confidence that, yes, we can do this and we know why we're doing it and we're going to do it. I think what gets lost often is, well, what is your role day to day? Right? So
what is the leader's role day to day?
Yes. Yeah, and I think there's, absolutely. I mean, listen, it's hard being a leader and it's hard being, I would say, a C-level executive where you constantly have stuff being pushed at you. But when these transformations take place, the day-to-day can be the grind, right? That schedule can be the grind. But here's the thing is, what normally happens is you get a monthly meeting. The executives might show up. They might not, depending on their schedule. You get a status report that has to be watered down because they only have a half hour or 40 minutes or whatever. And so you can't go into too much detail. So you say, oh, well, we're on track. We're meeting our objectives.
Right.
And there are three risks. And the risks are usually not something they have to take action on, very rarely, right?
Right.
In my experience. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, okay. And then after months and months of that, they're like, I'm not going to go to that meeting. Just send me a Slack or just send me the deck and I'll read it. And so they become disengaged. So what happens is those executives that we depend on to be in those meetings now stop showing up. And what happens is they're not asking the tough questions.
Right.
Right. And that day-to-day and that engagement is about saying, are you sure? Well, what if we did it this way? What if we thought it this way? The benefit of these executives at times is their experience. It's not the execution. It's them questioning.
And their partnership with their colleagues, too. Because again, we get into some of these, like, we cannot afford the silos. And the executives know where, you know, potentially we've got upstream industry or where we've got partnerships where we need to honor that too. We've got to ask the tough questions.
Right. And so we love our stats. So Harvard Business Review has a stat that only 21% of employees feel confident their leaders can manage emerging challenges. So that means 79% of the organization doesn't even believe that when something happens, that their manager, their executives are capable of handling
prepared it. To handle it.
And part of it, I believe, is because you can't know all the details, but you have to be in a more frequent day-to-day, i.e. more tactical than you may want to be, meeting, because that's where the real power of, oh, that's the problem? Wait a minute. And I've been guilty of this, as I'm sure you have, is the project's going on. You're like, oh, there's this noise. And specifically, I had this on a project I did 2 years ago where somebody's like, oh, there's this problem. And I'm like, okay. And they're like, yeah, we think we got it. And it blew up. And then when I finally sat down and said, explain to me exactly what the problem was, they're like, And I was like, oh, so you just missed that file? And they're like, oh. So for weeks and weeks, the problem was solved in 10 minutes. But it was because I didn't spend the time to sit and actually listen to the problem that we didn't resolve it sooner.
Right.
And so I use that as a microcosm of an example that when leaders let things go and they just accept the project's green, the project's yellow, the project's red, and even when it's red, well, what is the real problem? Because they depend on their team to deal with that problem.
Right.
When they probably should be the one asking the really smart questions to say, guys, stop for a second. Elevate yourself above the day-to-day. Let me be your sounding board.
Right.
Let me take that thought and expand upon it. Right?
Yeah.
And that's showing up.
That's showing up, and that's showing respect for all the work that is being done. And it's also mitigating that explosion, like you alluded to, that, you know, finally it blew up. When we take the time to have those sane conversations, we eliminate as many blowups. And that's really the end goal. We want the transformation to work. We don't want the blowups. We hate surprises. I know. You and I both hate surprises when we're going through these projects. Executives hate surprises. So as much as we can, go to the meetings. And I would say not just, you know, where you start to feel like, oh, I need to be scratching on that a little bit further. The other thing too is, and I know you'll talk to this, is let's celebrate the small wins, because man, we need the momentum. When we are working on a project for 12 to 18 months, we need to really celebrate the small wins. And when your executive celebrates those small wins with you, that's powerful stuff.
Well, and so I want to move on to the next lesson, but before we do, what I want to go back to the vulnerability piece, because when there's this relationship, I feel like, that gets formed with leadership, which is you're up here, I'm down here. And the vulnerability allows a little bit of that elasticity in the relationship. And so the more human, and I'm not saying executives aren't human, but the more you show you're part of the team, not adjacent to the team or above the team, then people feel more comfortable having more open conversations. Because I had this conversation the other day where I feel like people are not trained how to talk to executives, right? It's something that maybe you learn over time.
Right.
But what happens is, and I am way guilty of this, I love details. So I am going to regurgitate every detail to you, and executives don't want the details.
No.
And the reason I do it is because I don't feel like you can make a real factual decision unless you see all angles of the problem. So that's my reason for doing it. Been right. told repeatedly to stop doing it. But I think that the more you can accept a conversation that isn't maybe very linear or very dialed in to you as an executive, because maybe that person is struggling to articulate the real problem or is challenged or confused, whatever, the more you can kind of go with them on that conversation and that journey and not be like, I'm an executive, I don't have time to listen to this, give me the three things I need to know. Well, but maybe right. the three things you need to know, they don't know how to articulate in a way for you to understand it.
And I find oftentimes it's, you know, it's the same as, you know, going through an interview. It's the same as going to a dinner party sometimes with right. people you don't know. Like, tell me the story first, and then you're really going to start to understand, like, oh, yeah, like, that's super interesting. I see where that fits in. So, like, what are the top three things that are going on? Or, you know, then you start to get into that conversation too.
Right.
And again, it's some of it's being human, and some of it is we need information in different ways. And I think, you know, as the executive, there is like, let's give a little bit of room for here's what's happening and here's why the hair is on fire. And then sometimes step back into that and give that.
Well, and also realize that your team may be under great stress, and that's where that's coming from.
Yeah.
Right. So like the empathy thing, I think, is a great theme that should be played over and over again, because I think when we get really busy, empathy goes out the window. When we're pushed for deadlines, it's like do it at all cost, when it's like, is that where the screw up happens? So,
right. Fair point.
Yeah. So lesson four is you can't delegate your way out of decisions. And so we call it the delegation trap, right? And it's where you can't do the flyby and assume everything's okay.
Yeah.
This goes back to the vision, back to setting clear expectations, back to being in the day-to-day. It's what is going to prevent success is you saying, oh, that's the problem. Oh, go talk to Jane. Okay, but Jane probably has no context. And what, like, I need you to be involved. Right. And at times we feel like executives are just like, yep, like, here you go. Or here's my decision.
I don't understand the context, and therefore I don't scratch right on that. And everything's fine until it's not.
Right. And this goes back to the theme of connecting the dots, right? This is the experience I'm looking for from you. I'm looking for you to challenge my thinking. I'm looking for you to remind me of the why, because maybe the project's got off it. So you not being part of that decision and delegating that decision actually is more harmful than it is helpful. It may take something off your plate temporarily.
Right.
But then have we missed the why? And then the project goes left and you come back and let's do the postmortem. Why did it go left? Yeah, because you weren't in the room.
Yeah.
Because you decided to let Jane do it and Jane didn't know what she was talking about. Or, you know, you weren't clued into the details. You weren't connecting dots for me that I needed connected.
Right, right. So I've got a question for you on that. I'm going to totally put you on the spot. But sure. For those leaders, you know, you can't delegate your way out. What should they be doing instead? What are the types of questions? What do you see when people are doing this well?
Well, when they do well, it is actually sitting, you know, going back to kind of this day-to-day versus monthly, it's actually putting the time aside and having the conversations with the group. And it's not just with whoever's leading the program. It's with the team. Hey, Andy, I know, you know, Rich is running this program and I know you're running this work stream. Like, what do you think's going well? What do you think's not going well? Well, you know, we're really struggling with meeting the timelines because of X, or, you know, consistently we're being asked for a technology thing, but I really think the business process is broken. No one's talking about that, right? Yeah. Hearing those things real time, because at times what I see is programs come on autopilot and they're like, Oh, we got to make the next milestone. And it comes milestone driven. And that why is over here.
Right. Absolutely.
But it doesn't become the day-to-day.
Yeah.
Right? And So leaders who I've seen that do this really well, one, are talking to multiple people across the team, not just hearing from the leader. And they're also reading between the lines a little bit. Okay, so you say you're doing that, but what does that actually look like? Like, how are we doing that? Because I've often seen that done very poorly, or In my experience, this doesn't work this way. So how are you doing that? And I think that, again, going back to this theme of multiple leaders being involved, is they're going to look at it from a different lens, right? So an IT leader is going to question a lot around your architecture and your data and your integrity and your security. A sales leader isn't going to care about that necessarily. They may care about the process and the customer and how is that?
Right. And as long as I have my data that may be fully related, but I'm looking at the data in terms of the decisions I have to make.
Right. Right. And I think it comes down to leadership style. And so I like this idea of genuine leadership and performative leadership. And to me, a genuine leader is what we've just been talking to. Somebody who shows up, who engages with multiple people, who really is asking those tough questions and is showing you through their actions that they're there for you and their vulnerability and letting you be a little human at times and allowing you to vent if that's what you needed at that time.
And still being tough. One of my favorite bosses, if things didn't smell right, she would call the two leaders in the room. So it might be IT and sales to say, these two things don't make sense together. There's a disconnect. And
right.
You had to sit there until that disconnect was sorted out.
Right.
Period.
Yeah.
Very uncomfortable. Very effective.
Well, it's uncomfortable and effective, but I think that's why is because, and I think it's gotten worse, actually. I feel like when I started my career, conflict was more commonplace. And I don't know if it's because we have all this technology and you're masked behind a computer 90% of the time and you're not as face-to-face with people, but conflict is a good thing.
Yeah.
And people who can help you negotiate that conflict, even better. I've seen so many times where they're like, Rich, I'm not dealing with him. We're just going to go do what we want to do. How many times have you heard somebody say that? Yeah, I hear that, but that's not what we want to do. We're going to do this.
Yes.
You've already lost.
Yes.
You've lost.
Yeah.
And, you know, so a genuine leader really is showing up and doing all those things. A performative leader is just that. Oh, guys, awesome, great job. Let's do this. Let's do that. Where's the numbers? Great, great, great. Then they walk away. And then when the problems happen and they come in, they're usually angry. They're usually pointing fingers.
Yep.
And they're usually talking to one person, not the team. And they're usually talking down. Well, why did you guys do this? It's a finger pointing exercise because the performative leader doesn't know anything. They haven't taken the time to be in the day-to-day, learn the issues. They're just creating this vision of what we're going to do. And those leaders, which we've all worked for, to me, they're not worth their salt. I had a leader who, they were smart. I will never say otherwise. I think there are a lot of smart people out there. I think it's just how they approach. And we're in a meeting with everybody and I said something. They're like, no. And just moved on. And I was like, okay, well, I'm not a three-year-old. And their leadership style was very like, I'm going to come in, I'm going to tell everybody what I want and what I think, and I'm going to walk out. And
I made a decision. It was no. Moving
right.
on.
And didn't understand the why behind the... wanted to understand the why. And, you know, unfortunately, that's where transformations fail and stall because your leadership is being performative and not really genuine.
Right.
And it really is a problem if you're not asking real questions and understanding, guys, I think you're missing the why. But remember, this isn't why we're doing this, guys.
Right.
You've somehow gotten off track,
right? Right.
And a performative leader is only going to say that when the digital transformation is way off track.
Right. Right. Right.
The genuine leader
Red
is going to...
Red alert, fail is coming.
Right.
The fail is over. At that point in time, the failure is probably already in motion.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
So it leads us to lesson five, which is starving your transformation will kill it. And it's most likely what you're doing, like, to be honest. And when I say you're starving your transformation, I think it starts with what is a successful transformation look like? If you mapped out a successful transformation, it would be the right requirements, the right budget, the right team, the right timeline. And a lot of times what happens is they have these big lofty goals. We're going to save $8 million or $20 million or $300 million. And we're going to increase revenue by 60%. And we're going to do all this stuff. Great. Great vision, amazing vision. Then you start putting the plan together and you're like, okay, well, to do that is going to take $60 million in cost. Oh, wait a minute. Why is it going to be $60 million? We're going to hire an outside consultancy to do the implementation. We've got to hire a training team to enable the team. We've got to, you know, re-swizzle this and that. And usually these transformations come with a lot of cost before you get the outcome in the back end.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And so what starts happening? People get nervous. Well, I really
remember,
and that's a big bet. And my name's on the line. And well, you're telling me it's going to take a year before I do that. Well, what can you do in 6 months? Or what can you do in 3 months? And oh, can we change this? Can we cut scope? You're starting to starve your transformation because now you're saying, I'm going to do, let's just say 20% higher revenue. But it was predicated based on this business case, guys. It was predicated based on doing these things.
Right.
I've no problem.
So if you cut out half of the things you're going to do.
Right. You that 20% comes 10% or 8%, right?
Right.
So
now your business fulfillment, your benefit might be 50%, or you didn't get the bulk of it done. And so it actually comes down to 30%.
Right. And a CIO I work with all the time, you know, she always says this to her team is like, you can't just deliver foundational without delivering some results, right? Which I truly believe, right?
That's true.
So, and a lot of transformational programs have foundational stuff to them. You got to fix the plumbing, which nobody finds sexy, and it costs a lot of money.
Right.
But the plumbing is where you scale later.
Right.
Right. And so,
which is again part of the transformation. It's because it's not a completed project. It is a transforming the way we do business. So at the end of that, you've got a new operation and their job is to start to optimize. And that's where we start to get to those really, really long-term results.
Correct. And so when you're thinking through the transformation, yes, absolutely think about it in phases. But remember, each of those phases, going back to lesson one where we talked about KPIs, is then each of those phases have to have KPIs. And the KPIs are the leading or lagging indicators that are going to say, we're doing the right thing, we're moving in the right direction. Your ROI is not going to come until that program delivers what it needs to deliver. And those leading and lagging indicators are now the sum of those things. So if you want to increase revenue, hey, is your pipeline velocity going quicker? Are you getting more conversion rates?
Right.
Are your deal sizes bigger? Like, what are the things that are going to lead me to believe we've made the right decisions?
Right.
Now, in these transformations, you can sometimes chunk that out. But be realistic about what you're going to get for each of those chunks.
Yeah.
And this is where I think when you starve the transformation, this will go back to performative and genuine leaders. Performative leader is going to say, just get me something. And then when the results aren't really there, and you say, well, the results aren't there because we didn't do X, Y, and Z. No, that's just an excuse. Whereas a genuine leader is going to protect those team members and say, great, like, so let's re-baseline.
Right.
Let's make sure everybody understands, ELT, the board, that we've rebaselined, that this is what we're doing because we want to spend less money. So we're going to slow the roll. So you're not going to get that big, grandiose 20%. We're going to lead up
you
to that.
You might, but it's going to take longer.
Right.
Right. Right. Right. The so other thing,
payback period really has to be addressed.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. The other thing that I would say that I think about when we starve it, you know, obviously we get to budget really fast. Are we starving it? But I would say the other thing that I see, and it goes back to vision and to alignment, is starving your people by allowing that squirrel moment of, oh, wait, I know this is going to take 12 months, but at month six, I'm like, here's something brand new we've got to do. And now everybody's attention is diverted to two paths rather than one. And I think really protecting from competing priorities is another thing that I would say in terms of starving projects. That's a massive challenge.
Well, and again, it all goes back to this. vulnerable, authentic conversation. Whereas like when you're starving it, you're looking for that like shortcut.
Right. Right. I gotta take calories off of this every day.
Right. Right. And the funny thing is there was other day somebody told me a story where a vendor came in and said, "We can replace your entire tech stack in 2 weeks and you're gonna be up and running and we're gonna show you all these numbers." And I'm laughing because I'm like, one of the executives was taking screenshots and they were all impressed and asking all these questions. And I was like, do you truly believe the complexity of your business and the amount of systems that you've invested over the years you've invested in them could be replaced in 2 weeks? Like, that is such, you right there have killed your transformation because you're believing something is a quick fix when the reality is, where's the change management? Where is the data? Right. Where is the business process piece and all that? You wouldn't even be able to have that conversation in 2 weeks across your organization, no matter replace your entire tech stack.
Yeah. Know who you are. Know what the business is. Right.
Right. Right. Which I think leads to lesson six.
Yeah, it does. It does. And it's, you know, I think it's another symptom of the AI. And, you know, like there are lots of really shiny objects, but lesson number six is tried and true, and it might be a little trite, but it still fits the bill. Culture eats strategy for breakfast, and you're on the menu potentially. So, right. You know, one of the things that I think most leaders missed is if you're not driving the culture, you're just watching it happen and you're going to be on the menu, like really, right. Truly. And I will say when, you know, back in the Eloqua days, and that was, you know, really a transformational time for marketing as marketing automation came in. And this was one of the things that really drove Eloqua was culture eats strategy every single day. And it's in how you show up. It's on how you do everything. But how many times have you seen it that a transformation stalls, not because of the tech, not because of the budget for once, but simply because the culture is not ready.
Right.
Period.
Right.
Period.
Right.
Yeah. So change, I think,
and change management starts the day you decide to do the digital transformation and lasts until you reach your ROI.
Absolutely.
That's a long haul.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it takes a lot. And the one thing, listen, I've been doing consulting a long time. You know what the one thing they pull out of consulting contracts 100% of the time?
Yep. Change management.
Change management. Oh, we can do it instantly.
Right. Because we have this amazing culture. And you know what our culture loves to do? Change. We're so good at it. And I would say the one thing is you cannot delegate cultural transformation. It is something that you model. I work with a client right now, and I will say this is something that that I've done forever. I know that you've done forever. So many companies don't do it. They are all over the globe. When they are talking to each other, they are on video 100% of the time. It is not weird. You might have bedhead. It doesn't matter. Everybody is on the phone. We were working with a consultant and they were 100% not on their videos. That's such a little thing. It's such a cultural thing. We did not have a good relationship with them. They were not well received internally. It took them so long to build. And it's not that, I mean, we got in the room with these people. In the room, they were fabulous. They were smart. They were brilliant. They were really, really interesting and had terrific ideas. It took months to form a relationship. And I'm telling you, half of it is the culture of we're not used to putting our faces on the screen. That's a little bitty example.
Well, But what's really important about that, especially in this day and age, is I will be on video calls and people will make faces. I know I can't hide my facial expressions when I don't like something and people are like, "What's the face?" Right? And you and I've said that's
true.
So you just made a face. So you either don't disagree with me or you're allergic to something I said. But it creates an honest dialogue.
Right.
Because if they're not on camera, they're rolling their eyes or they don't care or they're scrolling, doing multitasking. I mean, come on. How many times have you been on a conference call and you're like, "Hey, Rich, did you do? Oh, sorry, I was multitasking. Can you ask the question again?" Well, if you weren't listening then, were you listening at all?
Absolutely.
And so these digital transformations nowadays, I mean, listen, when I was at Accenture, we used to be on site every week. I was, road warriors.
Yeah, it was right? A different world, right?
Different world. We've both been in that world where you leave Monday and you come back Thursday night. But the benefit of that is you're sitting having those water cooler conversations.
Yeah.
You're under, as a consultant, I will say, understanding their culture and assimilating to their culture is critical.
Absolutely.
Right? Yep. And establishing those relationships. I mean, my number one client for many years has been your husband. And the reason we established such a tight relationship is for 2 years, we were all over the world doing this implementation. And we were having conversations at dinner. We're having conversations over coffee. We're having conversations whenever. And it was to the point where picking up the phone and having that conversation was very easy.
Right.
Because we've established that I understood the culture. I understood what he needed. I understood the why.
Yeah.
But when you really don't have that understanding of the culture,
right,
then people come in and they go, well, this is the way we do it. Well, I don't kind of care the way you do it.
Right.
And it's funny, you talk about Eloqua. When I was at a company, we were comparing Eloqua to another vendor and we wound up picking the other vendor and Eloqua wasn't happy.
Boo.
Part of it was that the other company actually understood our culture and what we were trying to do. And so there may have been a better product, and we talk about this a lot, but for our maturity and where we were,
right. We
needed somebody to help us along that journey.
Right. Right.
Right. We needed somebody to partner with us, that was in bed with us, not somebody who was talking to us.
Right.
And that's the way it felt from the search team for this product. It was, well, it was great. It was flashy. It was pretty. And I can see the merit, but it's not where we're at.
Right. Right.
And so, you know, to your point of modeling those behaviors, leadership really needs to say, guys, let's be honest with where we are. Yes, we have a lofty vision, but
right.
We are so far behind of where we need to be.
And then let's address the culture that goes with that, because you may have a culture that doesn't support that. And so what do you need to do so that you are now modeling those behaviors? You are building those behaviors into what you want to see, whether it's a pipeline review, whether it's show me the data that led you to a decision so that we really get in that habit of always leading with the data. We need to call out those barriers directly, and then we need to model and reinforce the behaviors that we want to see in the organization in order to make sure that that culture, again, if we build those tools in, if we build those behaviors in, the strategy has a lot more wiggle room.
Right.
Because we will have the right behaviors in order to get to reach our goals. The other thing that I think comes with that, and we've talked about it all along here, is just that communication. And, you know, when leaders over communicate and they are communicating up and they are down and sideways to their peers, keeping everybody informed and aligned. Again, it's that open, very transparent culture that drives consensus and alignment and helps you to get things done. So I think, you know, we all know it. It's good to go back and remind ourselves, are my behaviors, are my team's behaviors, are the organization's behaviors, is that culture supporting the strategy that we're trying to win with?
Yeah. So let's bring it all together. I mean, listen, we've seen this story 1,000 times before. Everyone gets really excited about a transformation.
Right.
You know, as outside consultants, we get brought in and we get excited with them and we're like, this big project and we're going to transform.
And we do get excited over every single project.
We do. No, it's funny you say that. I do. All right. Like, it's always this, what I love about being a consultant is it's always this new, fresh challenge. Although it may look the same and feel the same, how you approach it and fix the problem sometimes changes.
Yeah.
And so there's this real big fanfare, right? Like, we're going to do this thing. And then again, months into it, people are wondering why things really haven't progressed as far enough, or what happened, or, you know, what's going on? Well, they missed the fundamentals. They didn't really set us up for success.
Yeah.
And I think that's more true than it has. So if let's just kind of recap our lessons for everybody. So one, vision isn't clear enough. So
everyone knows it.
We need to connect the purpose to this impact.
Yep. Yeah.
We need those KPIs, right?
KPIs have to show the outcome. So your vision needs to be super, super clear. It needs to be outcome-based, and you got to have the KPIs tied in so everybody knows exactly what they're driving for. I think that's my biggest one on the vision.
Right. Two is leadership isn't aligned, right?
Yep.
So they're not connecting the dots. They're not bringing everybody together. They're not, the ELT as a whole is not have that shared vision.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we talked about, you know, building that trust. I think that's important. And then I think that one voice is just super, super critical. Get really, really clear. One voice.
Right. Right. I like the one voice because to me, I always think in terms of presentations, and I like presentations to always have that anchor slide, which is, guys, let me remind you why we're here, right? And even if that slide is the only slide that anchors the bigger thing, but then you go off and say, and this is what it means for marketing, or this is what it means for sales.
Right, exactly.
Remember, we're all doing this together, and there's the voice, guys, right?
Yep.
Voice.
Yep. One right. Outcome. Yep.
Showing up matters more than you think, right? We believe that you want to show and model the right way to show up, right?
Right.
Be that genuine leader, be authentic, right? Really provide leadership, right? It's the eight-all thing where you have that image of the leaders lead from the front, not from the behind, right?
Right. Right. Absolutely. Yep.
You can't delegate your way out of hard decisions, right? Ask questions beyond the surface. Get to the real root of what's going on. If somebody signals a problem, jump in. As a leader, your experience matters. That's why you're there. You have a combination of years of experience that have got you to this elevated position in companies. And honestly, employees are thirsty for that knowledge. They want that. They want that engagement.
That's the growth. Yeah. Everybody has a goal of where they want to be, and they want to, you know, generally people want to do things better and smarter. The other thing you talked about, you know, all the detail that, you know, that you give detail. I like having the context for big decisions. And I think that, you know, from the person who is speaking to the leader, it's really important that we are positioning some of that information that we're delivering, particularly from a consultant point of view, with the context. So, you know, we need to rely on our leaders to make the tough decisions. We need to empower them to do it with the right information.
So lesson five, starving your transformation will kill it. So be realistic. Be realistic about what this is, what it's going to cost, what it's going to take, how you're going to do it, and be honest. Like, if it's a $60 million project, it's a $60 million project. Don't try to pretend it's a $20 million project because you're going to go over, you're going to have change orders, you're not going to be successful. And you're going to be wind up explaining more as to why you didn't tell people it was a $60 million project and tried to convince people it wasn't.
Yeah, right? Absolutely. Absolutely. Yep.
And then the final lesson is culture eats strategy for breakfast every time.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
Know your culture. Know what you're doing.
Yep.
So, you know, here's what I think I'd say in closing is it isn't about being perfect, right? It's about being consistent. It's about, you know, it's about showing up in those companies that are hit the 79% success rate. It's not that they're better. It's not that they've done
smarter. They've got hired the smartest people.
Right. The leaders brought them together. There's so many examples of when a leader brings teams together, they accomplish amazing things. And when people are not aligned, it's fractured and they're not successful. It's just fact. And you could find 1,000 stats over and over again that would prove that point, or 1,000 business books, right? That would reiterate that point.
Right.
Strength is in togetherness and bringing teams together under that vision and that voice. Yeah. and showing them, modeling for them what success looks like. So stop waiting. You're already in the middle of a transformation. Most companies are.
Right.
So just course correct right now. And the true thing is if you're a leader and you walk into your organization tomorrow and just poll people.
Right.
Am I engaged? Do you think I'm showing up? Am I asking the right questions?
What do you think our vision is? Right.
Right.
Ask you may the be questions of course answer, correct. Yeah.
Right. Right. Cool. So this was part one of a series. So I think we have more coming in 2 weeks. So look forward to that. And I would say happy transformation, everybody.
Love it.
All right. Talk to you guys soon.